This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 21st of October 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 21st of October. And this week our editors were Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the headlines this week, the headline stories are Hospital in Doubt, Councillor Ban Claim Denied, and three to receive special honours. So we have the story behind the first headline, please. Shirley.
Hospital in Doubt. An MP fears that a proposed hospital, which was set to be built north of Winchester, could be under threat in the wake of Brexit. The multi-million pound project to set up a new critical treatment hospital could miss out on £100 million funding, according to Hampshire MEP Catherine Bearder. The project by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Hospital Foundation Trust was in discussions with the European Investment Bank, EIB. The bank says it cannot lend to the UK at the recent high levels, and all lending decisions by the EIB have to be approved by all EU member countries, meaning other countries have a veto. Ms. Bearder says this puts the project into jeopardy and comes after two NHS clinical commission groups say the cost of the project was too high. She has written to EIB Chief Werner Hoyer asking to discuss this project. Ms. Bearder said, "Decreased lending from the European Investment Bank is yet another symptom of Brexit." EIB Chief Werner Hoyer has said, "Following the vote to leave the EU, there will be a reduction in lending to British projects." The proposal to build a critical treatment centre in the heart of my constituency is absolutely vital, and I will fight tooth and nail to ensure this vital service to provide care to critically ill people is not dropped. Plans for the hospital near North Waltham were unveiled in February of last year and could treat thousands of critically ill patients. The NHS believes it is crucial for a modern health service, although there are fears it could lead to the downgrading of the RHCH. The Chronicle understands that no funding from the EIB has yet been applied for from Hampshire Hospitals NHS Hospital Foundation Trust, but they have discussed the matter with the Investment Bank. Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, Mary Edwards, said, "We have explored a number of financing options, including the NHS, the EIB and commercial options. We would review all of these options once final agreement to proceed with the project to build a critical treatment hospital and cancer treatment centre has been reached," she said.
Now, can we have the second headline story, please, Noel?
Councillor ban claim denied. Claims that a rebel councillor had been barred from speaking to senior council officers has been denied by civic chiefs. Councillor Kim Gottlieb said he had been told by council leader Stephen Godfrey his involvement with officers had been temporarily reduced following allegations of bullying. However, at the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday, Councillor Godfrey backtracked when asked by the committee if they were true. "Nothing I have done or could do would allow that," he said. Corporate Director Steve Tilbury added, "There are no instructions to officers not to contact Councillor Gottlieb." As previously reported in September, Councillor Gottlieb had been relieved of membership of the Central Winchester Regeneration Group by the council leader following complaints from senior city council officers and the then chief executive Simon Eden. Councillor Godfrey had previously said suspension was needed to stop the situation escalating. And it was later revealed that Silver Hill rebel Councillor Gottlieb had in fact been sacked. The Chronicle has seen several emails, including one from Mr. Eden, criticising Councillor Gottlieb with allegations of inappropriate and bullying behaviour. Councillor Gottlieb, whose self-financed legal action over Silver Hill led to the High Court ruling that the council has acted unlawfully over procurement of the £150 million scheme, had been critical of senior officers. Complaints against him are currently being investigated by the Standards Committee. At the meeting on Monday evening, which Councillor Gottlieb was unable to attend because he was overseas, his ally, Councillor Rose Burns, called the leader's decision undemocratic and unconstitutional. "To suspend somebody when there is no precedent is extremely inappropriate," she said. However, committee chairman Councillor Kelsey Lerney said the decision was Cabinet's to make. "Cabinet has acted within its powers to remove him," she said. However, it's a shame that we have had to go to this length to get clarification of the matter. The matter was then closed by the chairman, despite Councillor Gottlieb's call for the committee to seek the immediate reversal of his current situation in order to protect other members in the future. In an email sent to members of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee and seen by the Chronicle, the councillor said council leader Stephen Godfrey had emailed him, "Having discussed this matter with all Cabinet colleagues, we agree that it is necessary to temporarily reduce your direct involvement with officers."
And let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is headed, "Three to Receive Special Honours." The England rugby coach, a best-selling author and a film critic are among the people to be honoured by Winchester University this week. Eddie Jones, Bill Bryson and Mark Commode are to receive honorary doctorates during graduation ceremonies in Winchester Cathedral. Over 2,000 students are graduating in the cathedral in 8 ceremonies presided over by Chancellor of the University, Alan Titchmarsh. The annual celebrations begin with a procession from Abbey House to the cathedral, with civic dignitaries from around Hampshire joining senior university staff. Professor Joy Carter, DL, Vice-Chancellor, said, "Graduation is a time of celebration as we congratulate our students on their achievements. I am incredibly proud to see our graduates leave with the knowledge and wisdom to go and make a real difference in the world, and I wish them every success in the future. We are also excited to be honouring a number of inspirational individuals who in their distinguished careers have made significant contributions to society with the awards of honorary doctorates and fellowships," added Professor Carter. Australian Eddie Jones, honorary doctorate of science for services to sport, was appointed head coach of the England Rugby Union team on a 4-year contract in December 2015. As the first foreign head coach in English rugby history, and in his first season in charge, he achieved England's first Grand Slam since 2003 and a whitewash tour of Australia. The books of American Bill Bryson, Honorary Doctorate of Letters for Services to Literature, have sold more than 15 million copies and been translated into more than 30 languages. His latest book, The Road to Little Dribbling, examines his long-standing affection for Great Britain. And Mark Commode, Honorary Doctorate of Letters for Services to Broadcasting, is film critic for The Observer and the BBC. He lives in Lymington and co-presents the Sony Award-winning Commode and Mayo's Film Review on BBC Radio 5 Live and The Film Review on the BBC News Channel. Other prominent individuals being recognised by the university with an honorary doctorate this year include Sarah House, a water and hygiene engineer working in international development, horticulturalist Roy Lancaster, CB, former Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend James Atwell, former diplomat and governor of the University of Winchester, Dick Wilkinson, ethical jeweller Greg Valerio, and artistic director, Katie Prince. Alan Parton, the founder of the charity Hounds for Heroes, Rebecca Murray, campaigner and founder of Article 26, a project supporting forced migrants to take part in higher education, and Gloria Vesey, barrister and founder of charity Advocates for Children, will be awarded honorary fellowships. All those people being awarded honorary doctorates and fellowships have excelled in fields related to the university's research programmes, including creative writing and English literature, film studies and production, sports and exercise science, and psychology. And this is accompanied by three photos of the main recipients. There's a very serious one of Eddie Jones in discussion with some rugby players on the pitch. And then Mark Kermode looking directly at the camera as if he's just been watching a rather interesting film. But Bill Bryson, who now lives in Hampshire, striding along the Sussex chalk cliffs in the sunshine with his rucksack on his back and a broad smile on his face.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're now going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, editorial comment, what's on, and finally, items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Boosmans, Peter Egiot Boosmans, peacefully after a long illness, aged 91. Bone, Vera Daphne nay Grace Bone, aged 91. Fuchs, Monique nay Wells Fuchs, peacefully after a short illness, aged 94. Green, Jean Esme nay Lambert Green, aged 84. Holmes, Jane Holmes, at home in Winchester, aged 58. Mannering, Robert Arthur Bob Mannering, peacefully aged 96. Messenger, Fred Messenger, peacefully at home aged 92. Oram, Eileen Winifred Oram, peacefully at Willow Court Care Home, aged 94. Pete, Irene Jean Pete, peacefully at Devonish House, Winchester. Rebecca, Diane Charlotte Rebeck, at the Royal Surrey Hospital, aged 45. And finally, Sheila White, peacefully aged 89. And now Shirley's got Christian comment.
Right, this is headed A Prayer for Civic Renewal, and it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. Ever since I first heard it, I have loved the words of the Reverend Eli Jenkins' prayer in Dylan Thomas's play, Under Milkwood. I almost prefer it to the Lord's Prayer, as it seems intensely personal, whilst being inclusive. Also, for someone who is not known for being musical, I rather like it being sung, especially by a Welsh choir, or Catherine Jenkins. It's all about the little prayer he makes at the beginning of each day, asking for God's blessing on the town, and then to bless them overnight. As I grew up in the Christian faith, this was something I was taught to do each day, although not for the place I was living necessarily, more for the day and what lay ahead for me and my family. I have tried to do this, and most days have succeeded. I've never stopped to question its effectiveness or ask myself if it was more than a childhood ritual. There was a time when most civic meetings started with a prayer. School always began with assembly, which included prayer. Meals began and also sometimes ended with grace. Nowadays, these habits have largely gone, with reasons such as our multicultural society being cited. So I was very surprised to read the following headline in a paper recently: Civic Leaders Start Praying to Renew Our Towns and Cities. Apparently, local authorities are being encouraged to ask God to help them to revamp public services and reach out to the needy. It is hoped that as many as 200 civic prayer events will take place in town halls across Britain over the next few months, as council leaders say yes to invitations from their local churches to name the issues that are worrying them most and join in with faith leaders to pray for resolution. The initiative has been launched by the Cinnamon Network, a Christian charity that engages with churches of all denominations to enable them to serve those in need in their local community. However, in an age when it is increasingly contentious to call Britain a Christian country, and many deplore the idea of bringing faith into public affairs, this is not going to be an easy thing to do. Churches are apparently overcoming obstacles with the persuasive argument that Christian groups in Britain contribute an estimated £3 billion a year in social projects, and much more could be done if faith groups can cement partnerships with local authorities. Does it work? Well, apparently it does, and examples are given of successful events, and it is catching on. Perhaps the habits of our childhood, and indeed of past generations, might still have something to teach us for the age and circumstances in which we find ourselves.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Or the email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And the pigeon post is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. And there are 12 letters this week. Start with one read by Noel.
This is headlined Open Sesame, and it comes from David Wickham. Sir, after reading the report, Chronicle October the 13, which states a cross-party informal policy group is attempting to create a Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning Document, SPD, can it now be doubted that the magic key to solve all Winchester's planning problems has been found?
The next one is read by Jane.
And this from Ian Newbury is headed Silver Hill, a fiasco. Sir, having just read the story on the ongoing Silver Hill saga, Chronicle October the 13th, I am dumbfounded by the continuing confusion which appears to be present within Winchester City Council regarding the future direction of this important project. About the only consensus appears to be frustration by residents and councillors alike. Unfortunately, nobody appears able to take this by the scruff of its neck and actually do something. To create a Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning Document, which will not be adopted until the end of 2017, is like something out of Yes Minister, the only difference being that this is not meant to be a comedy. The machinations and paralysis within the City Council has turned Winchester into a laughing stock with good reason, and frankly, those responsible for prolonging this should be regally castigated. Having had the previous plan for Silver Hill wrecked by Councillor Gottlieb, the Council is operating in an atmosphere of indecision and certainly not providing the level of leadership of governance worthy of the city. If they continue to fiddle and do nothing positive, then the area around Silver Hill will continue its progress to be officially designated as a slum, assuming it does not fall down of its own accord due to neglect. All of this is guaranteed to put off any future investors in the city unless they like tipping their money down the drain. And that was from Ian Newbury, West Hill Park, Winchester.
And this one is from L.J. White and is headed Ways of Shopping. Sir, may I pass on an observation inspired by Joanna Lewis's column, Chronicle, October 13th? She comments on the demise of the high street retailer, particularly clothes shops, caused by the burgeoning online shopping. She prefers to try clothes at home, obtained via the internet, which is fair enough. However, for those old enough, we could do that 50 to 60 years ago. It was called catalogue shopping. Remember those old names, Marshall Ward, Great Universal, Littlewoods, etc., where one could browse through their catalogues in front of the fire and then place an order, perhaps through a local agent. If I remember rightly, you could also purchase said goods on hire purchase. Credit. Although quite popular, there were still plenty of shops in the high street. So is Miss Lewis blaming a modern system for a problem which has other factors not being recognised? L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And Lee Kirby writes about Marshall mishaps. Sir, I write in reference to the article published regarding the disruption in Hursley during the recent Winchester Half Marathon, Chronicle, October 6 and 13th. I was particularly disappointed to read that one villager found the marshals to be unhelpful with an unfriendly attitude. I was a marshal in the race, not stationed in Hursley, but in another rural area, and although I cannot speak for all, the marshals in my area were all jolly, polite, supportive, and acting as best as possible on the very limited instructions we received from the organisers. A pre-race marshal briefing was held, but on arrival it soon became clear that adequate direction on where we could and couldn't send people or allow people to pass had not been provided. I have sent detailed feedback to the organisers on how I believe improvement can be made for future events, and overall, while I sympathise with the villagers, it may be worth remembering that all of the marshals gave their time voluntarily. Lee Kirby, Brackenbury, Andover.
And this one from Daphne E. Smith is headed A Series of Scams. Sir, the elimination device I had installed 18 months ago certainly rid me of most of the irritating cold calls, and I can deal with the odd ones which occasionally slip through, usually an automated silent half-minute followed by a chirpy goodbye, or a man who introduces himself with a very English name, though his pronounced accent tells me he hails from very foreign parts. He addresses me as Mum, which is very polite, and asks how I am, to which I reply that I'm no bet of his interruption and I don't want to buy whatever he is selling. I recently had two calls which were obviously scams. The first from a woman who asked if I was satisfied with my cold calls elimination service. I said I was, and she went on to say that my payment of £78 was due and it would be the final one. I had details and receipts from the company I had dealt with and owned the device, so her call was a shot in the dark. The second scam was a woman saying that they, no indication of who they might be, had my medical details and that what someone would be coming to interview me at my house, and if I had a carer, they would like her to be present. I knew that a consultant I had seen at the hospital would not have anything to do with this, and I had already received the usual letter to confirm the date of my next appointment for next year. For the record, I don't divulge private details over the phone, deal only with reputable firms, nor am I gullible, for to quote the old adage, I was not born yesterday. And that was from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton, Alsford.
And this one is from Judith Martin, and it's headed Cultural Policies. Sir, I'm very sorry to see that Mark Curtis is to leave the Theatre Royal, Chronicle, October 6th. He's done a splendid job. His running of the Hat Fair has been a triumph. Occam's Razor, especially last year, and the Woolly Hat Fair, and is a good man besides, with other roles in the community. I wish him very well in his next role. But I also wonder if this is an opportunity to rethink cultural policy in Winchester. With so many big planning schemes in the air and so many ambitions, surely they should all be considered as a whole. The Theatre Royal, not originally built as a theatre, is a large building, and I imagine expensive to run. Even after the last big revamp, it's not ideal, with difficult front-of-house spaces and awkward access. Mark's hugely successful pantos mean it's come to be financially stable, but would a smaller, simpler space, perhaps purpose-built in Silver Hill, be more suitable for Winchester? The Theatre Royal has served very well for classical music in the very successful Chamber Music Festival, with a programme of alterations to rationalise the front of house and with no need for backstage space, which could be given over instead to a more convivial bar than the current one. Many of us still miss the old bar that opened off Tower Street. With the Discovery Centre next door, also providing music of many sorts, there could be a live music hub catering for a range of audiences. A new, pared-down black box theatre in Silver Hill, cheaper and simpler to run, could be the trigger for the cultural regeneration of the area. There isn't room here to list everything that could be done, but with so much land owned by the council, almost anything should be possible, with a little imagination. The letter from the previous council leader, Keith Wood, on redevelopment on September 22nd, was generally very helpful, but he said no one is able to say what they want to see in Winchester. This is my initial shot. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And Alison M. Biden writes about our racist shame. Sir, there is growing evidence that since June's referendum, there's been a rise in racially motivated hate crime. Whilst it is up to the police and the courts to take action against the perpetrators, one would have hoped and expected the British government also to have condemned this despicable behaviour and to uphold what we have been told for so long are traditional British values, openness and tolerance. Instead, the rhetoric emanating from the Prime Minister and Home Secretary, the latter emulating sections of Hitler's Mein Kampf, at the Conservative Party conference last week, will only have served to encourage those elements of the population who wish to make the others among us feel less welcome. As we approach the time of year when we traditionally remember those who have served our country, some having made the ultimate sacrifice, I would urge everyone to pause for a moment to remember what epitomised our foe in the Second World War. And since Polish nationals are increasingly becoming the targets of the current trend, we should not forget those Polish servicemen who served alongside our own. To embrace now or condone the fascist traits of xenophobia, supremacy and racism that our own forces stood against would be a mockery, nothing short of national shame and disgrace. It is certainly no way to honour our heroes. They deserve better. Alison M. Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
And David Catchpole's letter is headed Accident Helpers. Sir, through your letters columns, we would like to thank the staff at Marks and Spencer's in Winchester and South Central Ambulance paramedics who went to the aid of my 89-year-old wife and mother of four who had an accident in the store last Wednesday, October the 12th. She tripped and fell off the escalator and suffered a broken bone in her neck, along with numerous cuts and bruises to other parts of her body. We'd like to show our appreciation to M&S's first aiders who were promptly on the scene taking care and reassuring her. Also, the ambulance crew for tending to her and stabilising her condition. She is now receiving treatment at the F4 ward in Southampton General Hospital and is making good progress and remains cheerful. We will always be indebted to all those who tended to her during her hour of need, including hospital staff. And that was from David Catchpole and his daughters, Caroline, Sheila, Sharon and Shirley from Romsey.
This one is headed Memorable Choir and it's from Beverly Morgan. At a time of ever-increasing tension between Russia and the West, how innovative and inspirational of St. Cross Church to make possible a lunchtime performance by the male voice choir of Veronese, Russia. For those of us fortunate to attend, it was a truly memorable and moving experience. That's from Beverly Morgan, St. Cross Road, St. Cross.
And Dr. Jonathan Swanston asks, what's happened to the mismays? Sir, we recently went for a lovely autumnal walk up St. Catherine's Hill and were very surprised to see that the mismays has been allowed to grow over and is in a very poor state. Wikipedia states that this mismays is one of only two surviving historic English turf mazes where the path is a narrow groove in the turf and was visible in Google Earth. I understand that the St. Catherine's Hill is owned by Winchester College, but managed by Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. On investigation, the trust stated that the mismays has not been tended for 3 years. Why are those responsible for this important piece of Winchester's history allowed it to be neglected? Is this a function of the grazing methods being used, or is it intentional? Should Hampshire County Council use some of its tourism budget towards the upkeep? I notice that the link on the Winchester Tourism website to the mismays no longer works. Are Christmas markets more important than Winchester's history? Take an autumnal walk up St. Catherine's Hill and compare the current state of this important piece of history with a picture taken some time ago. As there are only two such mismazes in the UK, I do think it's important that it is kept in good condition. Dr. Jonathan Swanston, St. Faith's Road, St. Cross. And there is the picture that he mentions. It's beautiful, with the lines very clear, all circling round. It looks very mysterious too.
And this letter from James Anderson is high waste costs. Sir, today I took some unwanted tiles to the Winchester Tip. For a volume of 0.07 cubic metres, I was to be charged £7.50. In context, this is 10 times the going rate for a grabber load. The County Council are in denial if they think that such profiteering will not lead to displacement activity, inevitably of an antisocial nature. And that was from James Anderson, Wrightsclothe, South Wanston.
This one is from Jane Kendall, and it's headed, But Where to Go? Sir, so Winchester City Council wants Molly's Den to find suitable premises in the town centre. Chronicle, October 13th. Where exactly are these suitable premises which would allow a business such as Molly's Den to be run from? And that's from Jane Kendall, Blackdown Lane, Upham.
And that's the end of our letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of the contributors. And now it's time for your say. With the government looking to stop birth tourism by asking pregnant women to show their passport at hospitals, we asked passers-by in the Winchester area whether they thought this was ethical. And Noel's got the answers.
Yes, I've got four answers. One from Martin Croft, 42, plumber of Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, said, it's a thought in the right direction and some people do abuse the system, but I don't think it'll catch on. And then Julian Matthews, 50, police officer of Andover Road, said, it's disgraceful. How can we allow this to happen? Everyone should be treated the same. And Alex Jonty, 31, a game designer of Eastgate Street, said, I can't believe it's even got to the stage of debate. It should have been laughed at when first mentioned and put to bed. And then Mel Smithson, which interestingly is the only woman among this lot, Mel Smithson, 24, fashion blogger of Warren Road, Winnall, said, I can see what they're getting at, but it is the wrong idea. I think they need to think of something else.
Now we're going back through the mists of time for our historical news items from our dusty old files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was October the 18th, 1991. First little item is rail fare increase. Train travellers in Winchester have described British Rail's fare increases of around 8% as diabolical, disgusting and extreme. British Rail announced on Tuesday that Networth South East and intercity rail fares and season ticket rates would go up by an overall average of 7.75%, almost twice the rate of inflation, from January the 5th. The Weymouth to Waterloo line via Winchester is one of the worst hit, with the increases of around 8.9%. This has been singled out for an additional increase with five other Network South East routes, where British Rail claim there has been a multi-million pound investment in quality improvements. And the second little item is opt-out rebuffed. A campaign waged by all levels of hospital staff at the Royal Hants County Hospital has succeeded in postponing the decision to express interest in opting out. On the same day that more than 100 hospitals nationwide were granted trust status by the government, managers at the Winchester Hospital ruled out any possible bid until after the next general election. A brief statement issued on Wednesday said, "Following a period of consultation with staff at the RHCH, the management board decided last night that the RHCH will not express an interest in achieving NHS trust status at this time."
Now we're going back 50 years ago with Shirley.
50 years ago, October 22nd, 1966, and it's in two parts. First one headed "Defective Classrooms." A number of temporary classrooms in use in Hampshire schools have been found to have defective wall panels. The County Council Education Committee was told at Winchester on Thursday. It was stated that about 250 defective wall panels have been discovered, and the suppliers, Terrapin Limited, have offered to replace them where they cannot be repaired. They cannot be repaired economically on a shared cost basis. A defective panel in a classroom at Romsey County Secondary School has been replaced experimentally on a shared cost basis, and an investigation into the original causes of the deterioration is being carried out. And then secondly, it's headed "Officers Relieved." Hampshire Notebook. "A bane of the life of many a senior officer is the time he has to spend in court, presenting the police side of cases to the magistrates. For a person who is an excellent officer of the law, but a poor advocate, this can be a harrowing and embarrassing experience, and his discomfort can be increased by a defending solicitor who is able to make legal capital out of the hapless officer's liabilities. The decision of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority to appoint six full-time prosecuting solicitors must have been welcomed by policemen up and down the county. To be relieved of this burden must mean a great deal to an officer."
Over to Noel for 100 years ago.
Yes, October the 21st, 1916. Two items. Remember, we're still in the middle of the First World War. Unfit horse sales. House of Lords. The question of the sale of unfit army horses was raised by Lord Lee. The Earl of Derby said that such horses had been sold on both the Western Front and in the East, but orders were now being given not to sell any more in the East. In France, 17,922 animals had been sold up to September the 19th, 1916. In Egypt, 670 animals had been sold. If all these horses had been slaughtered, the loss to the revenue would have been £33,000 in France and roughly £7,000 elsewhere. The government were always being entreated to make every possible economy, and in this particular case, the sum of £40,000 had been saved. He would not be sorry were the state prepared to make some sacrifice in order to prevent any possible cruelty to these animals. And the second item is headed "Russian Offensive." Over a wide front extending from Volhynia to Galicia, the Russian armies are heavily engaged with the enemy. Though reports from Petrograd are brief, they show that General Brusilov is making a strenuous effort to break through to Kowel, while the forces of General Cherbachev are endeavouring to force their way to Halys, the last bridgehead of the Dniester. In terms possibly exaggerated for home consumption, both Berlin and Vienna speak of the enormous masses of men being hurled by the Russians against the Teutonic forces.
And finally, we're going back 200 years with Jane.
And 200 years ago was October the 21st, 1816. Firstly, mechanisation woe one. A meeting has been held by some bodies of distressed mechanics thrown out of employment by the introduction of machinery to petition the Prince Regent to put a stop to the introduction of such machinery. But that would not relieve them, for it is only by machinery that goods can be made up at the low prices which suit the continental markets. Therefore, were they even stopped immediately, the only effect would be to prevent the sales. For, as England has not the power to stop the machinery now in use in foreign countries, our trade would no longer be able to undersell foreign manufacturers, but the latter would be able to undersell us. And secondly, mechanisation woe too. We lament to learn that the horrible practice of frame breaking in the Nottingham district is now reduced to a regular system and carried into effect as if there existed no authority in the country sufficient to protect the persons and property of the subject or to punish the ruffians who perpetrate the wanton and abominable outrages which mark its progress and execution. The committee of miscreants who conduct this savage warfare against the best and most useful improvements of society exercise a power paramount to that of the state.
We're back in the present again, and Shirley is going to read an alternative look at the news because she's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, Belgarum. This one, it's in two parts, actually. The first part is headed The last few weeks of landmark building. Make the most of it while you can. The former Hampshire Constabulary building is set for demolition in the near future. The exact date is unclear, but the 1960s modernist building was due to be knocked down soon as part of the Barclay Homes redevelopment. Many people have criticised the structure's stark lines, but Belgarum will miss its sleek outline atop the hill, overlooking the city, visible for miles, at Cheesford Head on the A272 and driving south on the M3 towards Euston. And the second part is headed Bubbly for tweeting mayor's 817th follower. She is the 817th mayor of Winchester, but the first mayor to tweet. From a standing start on becoming mayor in May this year, Councillor Jane Rutter has tweeted about all her official engagements and charity fundraising events. Last week, with the number of followers approaching 800, Jane decided it would be fun to identify her 817th follower and invite them to Abbey House, her official residence, to be presented with a bottle of celebratory fizz. She was helped by the energetic efforts of the Winchester Half Marathon Twitter team to pass the word around the Twitter sphere, and in just 2 days reached the magic number. The mayor's 817th follower was 24-year-old third-year student Erin White, who just happens to have one of the mayor's mace-bearers, Barbara Coulson, as her landlady. Barbara went with Erin to Abbey House on Monday to meet the mayor and to receive her prize. She said, "I'm very thankful to have had the opportunity to meet the Mayor of Winchester, and I'm over the moon to have won such a lovely prize for following her on Twitter. I will definitely be keeping up to date with all her future posts. Thank you for such a kind gesture." Erin is studying for her degree in events management and will be receiving another prize later this week for outstanding academic achievement from the University of Winchester. Mayor Jane Rutter added, "It was lovely to meet Erin, and clearly she is a hard-working and successful student. I congratulate her on her academic achievement and wish her all success in the future as she steps into the world of walk." of work. And with this, we have a photograph of the mayor with Erin White at Abbey House, and between them, they're holding this rather nice-looking bottle of fizz.
Our first person this week is by Khalid Aziz, and Noel's going to read his words.
Yes, and he is proposing an answer to bed blocking this week. May you live a long and healthy life, to paraphrase an old Chinese saying. The trouble is, for most it's not quite like that. In reality, we decline in old age, slowly at first, and then the graft steepens downwards. If it is serious, you may have to go to hospital. Even a few days of inactivity renders the human body weaker. Once treated, you need to convalesce. Trouble is, the convalescent stage has become the Cinderella of the health service. Now the Care Quality Commission has said that the social care element has reached tipping point and is having a knock-on effect on the NHS. A&E departments are clogged with people with nowhere else to go, bed blocking. Patients who could go home, their immediate medical needs dealt with, but cannot because there is no adequate social care. What that means in reality is that any family they have cannot or will not take on the burden, and that there isn't adequate care available even on a temporary basis. We've been saying for as long as I can remember that health and social care provision needs joining up, but it's never happened. We used to have a Department of Health and Social Security, but now it's just a Department of Health. Social services are devolved to county councils who are juggling cuts against a background of growing care needs. Private companies and charities like Enham Trust, which I chair, are invited to bid for contracts to provide care at home. But the increased costs, the living wage has had a big impact, and the shortage of suitable care staff, coupled with the unrealistic compensation from the councils, has seen businesses exit the market and charities walk away from some of the more egregious contracts on the basis that it serves no one to be a busy fool. However, at Enham, we are pioneering a potential solution to bed blocking. Our Cedar Park apartments comprise 10 self-contained recuperation and respite suites aimed at bridging the care gap between hospital and home. We can tailor care to suit individual needs. The apartments have been well received by the professionals who visited, doctors, physios, occupational therapists, and even administrators who all get it. The trouble is, months after their launch, they're not anywhere like full. The problem? Money, of course. Even though the offer is unanswerable, it costs around £1,000 a night to keep someone in a hospital bed. The Enham solution starts at around £80 a night. But getting the state administration to sort the funding is a nightmare. Which budget pays? Social services budgets are stretched, and of course it's cheaper to have a carer do a home visit once or twice a day rather than fund a full-time convalescent stay, however short. So Cedar Park apartments are being gradually filled by people who can either pay for themselves or by social services funded individuals who are deemed not to be able to fend for themselves at home, even with support, but not by NHS bed blockers. If the NHS stroke social services could get its act together, we could make our offering part of a seamless path on the road to recovery.
Now, Jane's got the editorial comment.
And editorial comment this week is, distrust could derail major city schemes. Two stories in the Chronicle today highlight the deep problems afflicting Winchester City Council. In one, Chris Higgins, former Chief Estates Officer at Winchester University, makes accusations over the design jury that was involved with the station approach scheme. Another reports on the confusion surrounding the sacking of Kim Gottlieb from the committee that will supposedly oversee the development of the new plans for Silver Hill. The atmosphere of distrust around both these issues is becoming toxic and will make it difficult for any kind of consensus to emerge. It is always impossible to get everyone to agree about everything, but at the moment the city seems to be polarised into several camps who view people who disagree with them with increasing suspicion. This really does matter, because it would not be inconceivable for things to evolve that makes it impossible for anything constructive to be done over both Silver Hill and Station Approach. Winchester almost needs to have some sort of South African-style truth and reconciliation conference where these issues can be thrashed out to open the windows and clear the air. The Chronicle has a third story about the appointment of the new Chief Executive Laura Taylor from Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council, who starts in January. She will have a huge job on her hands.
Now here's what's on. On Friday the 28th of October at 7:30pm and Saturday the 29th of October at 8pm at the Theatre Royal Winchester, the Spitfire Sisters are there singing vocal harmony numbers from the 30s and 40s as well as original material. Tickets from the Theatre Royal can be got, and the telephone number for them is 01962 840 440, or you can go online. That's at www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. Also on Saturday 29th of October in Romsey Abbey at 7:30pm, there's the 10th anniversary concert by the Charity Symphony Orchestra in aid of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Ambulance Service. Works are by Mendelssohn, Mussorgsky, Grieg and Strauss. Details and tickets by phoning 01794 512987. Or you can go online again, www.ticketsource.co.uk/musicinromsey. Tickets can be purchased on the door, but will cost £2 extra than the £14, £12 or £10 advance tickets. On Saturday, November the 5th, plug up your ears because it's bonfire night. On Sunday the 13th of November, everything is geared towards Remembrance Sunday. Thursday the 17th of November, the Christmas lights are going to be switched on and the activities begin at 4:30pm. On Friday the 18th of November, the Christmas market in Winchester will be opened at 6:30pm. This is the 10th anniversary of the market. On Thursday the 24th of November at 7:30pm in the Winchester Cathedral, Winchester Music Club will be presenting works by Parry, Holst and Vaughan Williams. Details are available on the Winchester Music Club's website, which is www.winchestermusicclub.org.uk. And finally, on Saturday the 26th of November at 7:30pm, there's Hope Church in Middlebrook Street, Winchester, is having a festive night with the King's Chamber Orchestra. Tickets are £10, and more information can be got from ringing 01962 840 800. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 21st of October at 7:39am and it begins at 5:59pm. And on Wednesday the 26th of October, it ends at 7:48am and begins at 5:50pm. Now, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, celebration for nurses and midwives. Newly qualified nurses and midwives who carried out their training with Hampshire hospitals got the chance to celebrate their achievements at a special ceremony. 30 nurses and midwives marked their graduation from students to qualified staff at the Trust's annual badge ceremony. Every year, the Trust presents graduates from the University of Surrey, University of Southampton, Bournemouth University and the Open University with a Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust badge that they will wear on their uniform for the rest of their career to show where they trained. Some 28 of the graduates, who included newly qualified and returned to practice nurses and midwives, are now working at one of the Trust's three hospitals, Andover War Memorial Hospital, Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, and Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester. Donna Green, Hampshire Hospital's chief nurse, hosted and spoke of her pride at seeing the students become newly qualified, fully qualified, And there's a lovely picture of at least 30 young women all standing with their certificates and smiling broadly at their graduation.
And this article is headed, MP urges a review of all blue badges. Winchester MP Steve Brine is calling for a review of blue badges after hearing concerns about the current scheme. He met Deirdre Wood from Hyde at one of his surgeries recently, where she outlined her views that the badges, which allow disabled drivers to park conveniently, do not take into account temporary disabilities. Mr. Brine said, "This is one of those areas of policy where details can often fall between the cracks, and Mrs. Wood had very real concerns from personal experience that the scheme doesn't work as robustly as it should. Currently, it fails to recognise the fact that a temporary disability, such as a hip replacement, is equally as debilitating as a long-term problem. And in addition to the problem over flexibility, where Mrs. Wood was issued with a much-needed blue badge, it covered the next 3 years, which is just not necessary." Mrs. Wood said, "I'm grateful for Steve taking up this issue. In the grand scheme of things, I appreciate it may seem a small issue, but the time it took for me to be allocated a blue badge, and then the coverage time, which is far too long for what I really need, doesn't make sense." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the artist and weaver Deirdre Wood with her temporary walking stick and blue badge for her car, standing with Steve Brine in a very small little street trying to get some cars into it in Hyde. An interesting discussion of having too long a blue badge receipt.
And this one is headed, £100,000 pothole compensation. More than £100,000 was paid out in compensation to drivers whose vehicles were damaged due to potholes on Hampshire roads. Almost 2,000 claims were made by drivers over the course of a year, meaning Hampshire received more claims than any other authority. Figures show that of the 1,952 claims made, 306 were successful. In all, £103,480 was paid out to disgruntled drivers between 2015 and 2016. Hampshire Transport chiefs have hit back over the figures, saying as the third biggest county in the country, they are responsible for more than 5,300 miles of roads, and figures should be viewed as the number of claims made per 100 miles of road. In Southampton, the state of the roads cost the authority just £109 for the same period, with 75 claims made, of which one was successful. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "Hampshire is the third largest county in England, with over 5,300 miles of road, much of it rural. In fact, if you look at total claims in relation to the size of the network, it would show that Hampshire's figure of 37 claims per 100 miles means that Hampshire County Council is certainly not the authority that receives the most claims in England. The county is also strategically placed between two major ports and London, with roads leading to major motorways and trunk roads, and also has the highest car ownership nationally. Additionally, during the winter of 2014, Hampshire's roads suffered severely from prolonged flooding, a fact acknowledged by the government when an extra £17.5 million was allocated to repair the potholes and damage done to the roads during the extreme weather, although the damage caused amounted to twice the figure government provided. It's certainly time the government thought about reinvesting some of the huge income they receive in tax from motorists, ensuring hard-pressed councils are given the tools to do the job they need to do to maintain the critical infrastructure that keeps the national economy going. Earlier this month, it was reported how the council had announced a £90 million highways improvement plan, which included work to repair potholes. Of that figure, £1.48 million had been secured from a pothole action grant from the Department for Transport.
First woman to take reins. A new chief executive has been appointed at Winchester City Council. Laura Taylor will take on the role and is due to start in early January 2017. It comes after the departure of Simon Eden, who left in September after 13 years at the helm. She will be the first female chief executive in Winchester City Council history. The crucial role will see her act as the City Council's most senior officer, advising councillors and leading staff management and service delivery. She'll be responsible for 470 staff, a budget of more than £90 million a year, and a capital programme of more than £170 million over the next 5 years. Mrs. Taylor is currently Executive Director of Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council and has previously worked at other Hampshire authorities, including Test Valley Borough Council and Eastleigh Borough Council. Laura Taylor said, "Winchester is an attractive place to live, to work and to visit. I look forward to helping members and colleagues work with local communities and organisations to develop and deliver the Council's ambitious plans for the future."
And now we have Leading the Way for Cancer Treatment. Hampshire has been named as one of the best areas in Britain for life-saving cancer treatment, it has been revealed. Figures show the county is one of the top areas in England and Wales for a swift diagnosis and treatment and for patient satisfaction. Now health chiefs are urging patients to ensure that they are best placed to battle with the disease by contacting their GPs as soon as they spot symptoms and to regularly sign up to screening sessions when they are available. New research released by NHS England shows that 87.8% of around 15,000 people diagnosed with a disease in West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, area received their first treatment within 62 days of their first urgent GP referral. The figures show one-year survival rates in the area are 73% above the national average of 68.8%. Meanwhile, a survey found that almost 90% of 860 patients in the area rated their cancer treatment highly. This means that patients in the area are living in one of the top parts of the country for cancer treatment out of 209 CCG areas in the country. The study reveals that over half the patients with cancer are diagnosed at an early stage, which means they have a better chance of making a full recovery.
What's on the menu in the gourmet capital? Winchester is bubbling with anticipation for this year's wine festival, gracing the city over the 25th and the 26th of November. The opportunity to taste fine wines and food from around the globe is only a small slice of the culinary offering in the city. Fondly known as the gourmet capital of the South, Winchester boasts a huge selection of independent, national and celebrity chef restaurants. Whether it's a pre-work breakfast, a long lunch or a celebratory dinner, the variety of restaurants and bars is vast and will suit every taste and every pocket. As well as the extensive selection of eateries available in the city, we have also seen the emergence of gourmet festivals, including the aforementioned Winchester Wine Festival, Winchester Beer Festival, Hampshire Food Festival, and the Cheese and Chili Festival. February 2016 welcomed the first ever Cocktail Week to Winchester. Winchester BID were approached by local foodie pair Gary and Marcus of Cabinet Rooms to launch the inaugural event, which attracted hundreds of visitors to the city. The week was open to wristband holders and consisted of a number of events hosted in locations all across Winchester, from a cherries and chocolate masterclass at Chococo to a sushi and sake evening hosted by Kyoto Kitchen. There was something to appeal to all tastes, and it certainly brightened up the cold, dark nights of February. The week was concluded with a Cocktails Through the Ages finale party, where guests celebrated and sampled cocktails through from the Prohibition period all the way to the Electric 80s. Following such success, Winchester Cocktail Week is making a comeback in February 2017, this time run wholly by Cabinet Rooms and sponsored by Winchester BID and other Winchester businesses such as Rooster Creative Marketing and Paris Smith Solicitors. These festivals enrich the city, include and enhance the local community, and appeal to tourists and residents from different towns. They add to the footfall, business, and overall offering of Winchester, ensuring it stays a vibrant and interesting destination, and of course retain the culinary capital title.
And in case there aren't enough festivals, here's news that the city is gearing up for Christmas festivities. Winchester is gearing up for its annual attempt to become the Christmas capital of the nation. The chalets are arriving, the ice rink comes soon, and Winchester's Cathedral's Christmas in Winchester brochure, backed by the Chronicle, is about to land on 50,000 doorsteps in the district. For a decade, the city has boasted an ice rink and a German-style market that has been hugely successful in attracting tens of thousands of visitors. The ice rink opens from November the 18th to January the 2nd. The market is open from November the 18th to December the 20th. For the first time, the rink will be covered to beat the weather. And there's an imaginary picture here of what the rink will look like, with a see-through roof, and you can see through that is the cathedral all lit up. It's going to be wonderful.
And this article is headed Green Gas Mill. A controversial power plant is set to be built in Sparsholt after being given the green light by a planning meeting. The new plans for a green gas mill at Sparsholt College have been approved despite seven parish councils objecting. The college claims the plant, an anaerobic digester which turns grass into gas, can produce power for nearly 5,000 homes a year. It would need 60,000 tonnes of fuel, which energy company Ecotricity said would be sourced within a 15-kilometre radius of the college and transported by tractor and trailers. However, many residents are furious and argued that it would cause a huge increase in traffic and had concerns about tractors and trailers using narrow lanes. Sparsholt College says the facility would also be an educational benefit, helping to train the next generation of green gas engineers. Back in April, the plans were rejected due to traffic issues, but the college and Ecotricity came back with a revised plan, which is subject to a Section 106 agreement with 32 planning conditions. The City Council Planning Committee heard from local City Councillor Caroline Horrell, who was against the scheme. Councillor Horrell argued that the scheme was unpopular with seven parish councils, who represent more than 7,000 residents, and said many people who support the application do not live near it. Councillor Horrell said, "No amount of Section 106 will protect the villages on the traffic forced upon them. It is a commercial enterprise dressed up as an educational establishment." Also heavily against it and speaking in public was Councillor Eileen Berry. "It is an encroachment on the countryside and I have never seen such an ugly building." Councillors voted 8-1 in favour and many felt the traffic issues had been dealt with by the revised application. Councillor Ian Tate was one of them and said, "If we accept the issues of a changing climate because of carbon usage, we can't have an environmentally friendly solution without some detrimental aspects. We can't have our cake and eat it. I think this application is in all respects a high-quality application. The chairman of Sparsholt Parish Council, Sue Wood, expressed her dismay at the decision, saying, "It is really disappointing. I'm really sorry that the views of seven parish councils were not taken into consideration." Dale Vince, the founder of Ecotricity, said, "This is great news. Green gas from grass has so much to offer Britain, and the planning consent gives us the opportunity to get started." Chair of WINAC's Renewable Energy Action Group, Richard Ritchie, said, "This scheme is especially important because it includes renewable heat. Winchester currently generates almost no heat from renewables." And this is accompanied by a CGI of what green gas mill at Sparsholt will look like, photograph, which is three round buildings, presumably anaerobic digesters, nestling to a certain extent, not terribly high, very large, into the green fields and the buildings of Sparsholt College behind them.
Hunt for cigarette raiders. A hunt has been launched for a gang who targeted two Hampshire stores, including one near Winchester. Now police investigating two shop burglaries, which happened within 2 hours of each other, have released CCTV images. Officers were called to break-ins at two stores in Colden Common and Hinton on the edge of the New Forest in the early hours of September the 1st. Both are believed to have been targeted by the same group, who forced entry using a range of tools, then fled the scene in a vehicle, possibly an Audi. The first happened between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. at the Co-op shop in Vigor Way, Colden Common, and £4,200 worth of cigarettes were stolen. The second happened between 3:30 a.m. and 4 a.m. at the Hinton Admiral Service Station, Lyndhurst Road. More than £7,000 worth of cigarettes were stolen. Police staff investigator Joan Mogger said, "We know that you cannot see the faces of those captured on the CCTV, but there is some distinctive clothing which someone may recognise. One of those, shown on camera, is wearing a distinctive red baseball cap, green gloves and an Adidas hooded top, and the other is wearing a shiny black jacket."
Piggery plan wins a coveted award. Winchester architectural practice Hugh Thomas Architects has won the Sunday Times British Homes Award 2016 for their redesign and conversion of an old piggery into a home of 5,500 square feet. Mr. Thomas said, "This is the first time we've entered these awards and we were delighted to have been shortlisted. So to win this award is a very exciting and satisfying thing. The owners converted the building themselves, following our designs exactly, and have caught the spirit of the building beautifully." Frillinghurst Mill, near Haslemere, Surrey, was formerly a piggery and a cattle shelter built in the 1950s. When Mr. Thomas first visited, he realised that this distinctive barrel-vaulted farm building had been designed with skill and care. "It was very unusual for a farm building to be so well thought out. I thought it was quite exceptional." Further research revealed that it had been designed by Walter Shepherd, who had worked with an architectural practice in London before becoming a landowner and farmer. It had deceptively simple design, with details including graceful bow lattice trusses. Convinced of its value, Mr. Thomas painted a watercolour to persuade local planning officers that the premises were worth keeping, and he worked closely with Russell Morris, Historic Buildings Conservation Officer with Waverley Council, to convert the building into residential use. Mr. Thomas approached the conversion and design as if it were a listed building, with consideration for both its legacy and location. Mr. Thomas has worked in Winchester years and was instrumental in saving Peninsula Barracks from demolition in the early 1990s. Of all the architects in Winchester, Mr. Thomas has probably seen built the most projects, including housing schemes in Eastgate Street, North Walls and Little Minster Street, and of course instrumental at Winchester Village as well.
and more architectural debates with claims design jury was misled. A property expert has publicly accused civic chiefs of misleading a design jury who voted in the failed station approach scheme. Chris Higgins of the City of Winchester Trust accused the City Council of altering the decision made by the design jury, who he claims voted for Scheme C, design engine from Winchester, and not Scheme B, Hopkins Architects from London, as announced earlier this year. At the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday, he said he was furious when he heard the claims. "I certainly believe the jury was misled," claimed Mr. Higgins. In an email sent to the council by one of the jury members, they raised a number of issues with the competition which I am not happy about. The jury actually voted for Scheme C, and three or four members of that jury wrote letters to the council expressing their concerns. However, these letters remain unanswered. Mr. Higgins, former director of estates at the University of Winchester, added, "I ask the council that these lessons are learnt. You have spent something like £400,000 on a failed scheme, and this is just so sad for Winchester. I still want station approach to be successful, but I'm furious at the information that I have been told." He also expressed his fury at the unprecedented way more than half of the architectural firms in the competition dropped out. However, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury slammed the claims. "For Mr. Higgins to make comments about unprofessionalism within the council and that it misled the jury is completely unjust. I look forward to him substantiating these claims before the next committee meeting on November the 30th so I can investigate them fully." Nevertheless, the new proposals to restart the controversial scheme, including a new flexible brief, were well received by the committee. The revised plans will see the City Council work with the Royal Institute of British Architects to search for an architect. This decision is a stark contrast to that of the previous scheme that saw a number of firms compete in a design competition, an idea that has since been strongly criticised. The multi-million pound scheme collapsed in July. One of the concerns made about the previous scheme was the inflexible design brief. However, Mr. Tilbury has confirmed the new scheme has a very flexible brief. Councillor Linda Gemmell agreed that this was an improvement from the previous scheme. Nevertheless, Council Leader Stephen Godfrey said civic chiefs want to see a new design developed over the next 12 months. The leader added the council now needs to act as quick as we can to make sure the 7.7 million local enterprise partnerships funding is not lost.
Jane gets behind bar of Fifth Pub. Winchester pub owner Jane Gillin has acquired a fifth pub in the city. Specialist leisure property agents Davis Coffer Lyons completed the sale of the King Alfred Public House of an asking price of £99,950. The leasehold pub in Hyde includes five letting bedrooms and is held on the remainder of a Green King lease. The traditional two-storey late Victorian property will become the sixth pub for Miss Gillin, who already operates several others in Winchester, including the Mucky Duck, the Corner House, St James Tavern and the Green Man, as well as the Forester's Arms at Frogham in the New Forest. The King Alfred is one of the last back street pubs in the city and has a strong local clientele. The vendors, Gary Swan and Janet Graham, who have operated the King Alfred for 20 years, will continue to operate their remaining pub, the Cricketers, in Easton. Keith Goodwin, the Associate Director, Davis Coffer Lyons, said, "We are delighted that Jane is taking on the King Alfred. Whilst the pub is already well established, there is an opportunity to develop trade and enhance upon the foundations laid by the former owners. Jane clearly has a great passion for the local area and a talent for invigorating traditional pubs.
Drug toxicity man was dead for weeks. A Winchester man who was found in his home weeks after he died was addicted to drugs and alcohol, an inquest in the city heard. The alarm was raised on February the 29th by neighbours of Peter Vale, who grew concerned for his welfare. Police then forced entry to his property on Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, and found the body of 29-year-old. Winchester Coroner's Court heard from pathologist Dr. Hayley Burnley, who confirmed Mr. Vale had died from psychoactive substance toxicity. However, she added that a date of death could not be determined, and he may have been dead for several weeks. This cause of death was backed by toxicologist Peter Street, who said synthetic cannabinoid was discovered following a urine test. He concluded that the father of one had taken an overdose of cannabis-like legal high. The synthetic cannabinoids are a worldwide cause for concern, Mr. Street added. They work a lot like cannabis and mimic what you would expect to feel, but the components that are included in them are regularly changing. You do not know what is in there. His GP, Dr. Nikki Wright, told the inquest in a statement that her patient had a long history of drug and alcohol abuse. However, Derek Vale said his son was trying to get better for the sake of his daughter. He told me he was drinking more than 20 pints a day, added Mr. Vale, when speaking about their first meeting in 10 years, in 2014. He said he was drinking 7 pints in the morning just to stop the shakes. However, we saw him another 4 or 5 times in 2015, and the last time we saw him in December, his consumption of alcohol was down to just 6 pints a day. He added, the one thing that really, really got to Peter was the fact that he could not see his daughter. When I saw him, I told him the reason he could not see her was because he needed to clean up his act. And I do believe that Peter was making a big, big attempt to do that after I saw him in December. Central Hampshire senior coroner Graham Short recorded a conclusion of a drug-related death. The issue of legal highs has come to the forefront in the last couple of years. They're used widely by young people, especially teenagers, who believe they're safe. A shop called Head High on Stockbridge Road in Winchester, near the railway station, was shut down by the police using new powers in December last year. The drugs are known to be rife inside prisons, such as Winchester.
And this article is headed, £2 million tax bill to send obese for slimming. A Hampshire council is spending £2 million of taxpayers' money on sending obese people to slimming classes. Obesity is so prevalent in Hampshire that the county council has brought in Weight Watchers to tackle the problem. A new £2 million programme has been launched which will give overweight adults 12 free weight loss sessions that would normally cost them £75. The announcement comes as figures estimate that 65% of adults in Hampshire are overweight or obese, with Southampton at 62%, and one in three children in the county leaving primary school at an unhealthy weight. As a result, obesity-related diseases and health problems are costing the Hampshire healthcare system £330 million per year. Anyone with a body mass index of 30 or above will be able to self-refer themselves to a Weight Watchers session. Hampshire's Executive Member for Public Health, Councillor Patricia Stallard, said, "The issue is a serious public health concern and one of the greatest challenges of our age. People don't have to go via their GP. They can just drop in to Weight Watchers meeting, even if they just think they are obese, and Weight Watchers will check their BMI. Weight Watchers will monitor progress and use a code to communicate with the council. Patients will be expected to lose 5% after 12 weeks, with more sessions available if there is a real reason for not shifting the pounds." Councillor Stallard added, "It's a way of engaging with people in the modern world. In years gone by, we would have given out leaflets or something, but nowadays people might be reluctant for whatever reason. Now they can just pop in. In Hampshire, we have pockets of social and economic deprivation, and there is a direct link between obesity and deprivation. But we also have the more affluent areas where people can afford to buy rich foods and go out for lots of meals, so it affects everyone. Weight Watchers won the contract in an open tender process. A separate service for pregnant women to encourage healthy eating and physical activity throughout pregnancy is also being introduced. Jo Measures, head of health at Weight Watchers, said, "Weight Watchers has a proven track record of providing weight management plans that have tangible results, plans which can be incorporated into an individual's lifestyle in a sustainable way. Our flexible and balanced approach to weight management has helped millions of people find their way to a healthy and happier life." And this is accompanied by a photograph not showing the face, it has to be said, of a very large gentleman sitting outside eating what is probably his lunch, with consisting of a packet of crisps and a bag of white-filled rolls.
This one is headed, "Marking 20 years of helping people." Staff and volunteers from the British Red Cross and Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service celebrated 20 years of a groundbreaking service, providing comfort to people in a time of crisis. The two organisations celebrated at a special event at Hightown Fire Station in Southampton. On the very day it was launched, October the 4th, 1996, the Hampshire Emergency Response Service was called out to its first incident. Newly trained Red Cross volunteer Linda Reed was one of those providing emotional support to the family involved when they returned from walking their dog to find their home on fire. 20 years on, Linda, 67, from Chandler's Ford, is still an emergency response volunteer, as committed as ever to her vital work, providing support, comfort, and a place of sanctuary to people coping with a crisis. Red Cross emergency response volunteers are equipped with a support vehicle containing comfortable seating, refreshments, spare clothing, hygiene items, and even shower facilities. Volunteers provide comfort, food and hot drinks, and a listening ear so people can talk through their feelings, start to make sense of what's happening, and take vital next steps to cope. The Hampshire service was one of the first in the country. Today, these emergency response teams exist in more than 40 countries across the UK.
More low-key take on beautiful game. It is the new football sessions that are set to breathe new life into the game in Winchester. Walking football has kicked off in the city and is aimed at playing a low-tempo game with little contact, with a focus on decision-making. The initiative is run by the City Council and by the Hampshire Football Association, and people can play every Tuesday at River Park Leisure Centre on the AstroTurf pitches. Benefits include lower heart rate and blood pressure, less fat, more muscle and better mobility. Walking football also offers social benefits, such as the chance for participants to meet new people. It is suitable for men and women. Flo Lunn of Hampshire Football Association said, "Walking football has become increasingly popular and is designed to help people keep an active lifestyle. Sessions are between 10 and 11 a.m. and cost £2.
And this is headed Inspiring Event. A heartbreaking story of mental breakdown, addiction and the tough road back to recovery was the climax of last week's AGM and supporters' evening for the Winchester Church's Night Shelter. The shelter provides a safe home and step forward to more permanent accommodation for more than 100 of the city's most vulnerable people. Supporters packed into the St Peter's Pastoral Centre in Jury Street, right opposite the night shelter. They heard local police inspector John Turton talk about the war on drugs and the partnership working, which aims to stop the supply from London-based dealers. They celebrated the role of volunteers who contribute more than 9,000 hours work each year. Their role was illustrated in new films made by the Night Shelter. The films were supported by talks from Shelter director Nigel Bartlett and John Druce from Arkiva, who highlighted how corporate sponsorship can benefit the voluntary sector. But it was the final talk by John Walker, who stayed at the Night Shelter for several weeks, which illustrated most poignantly the work undertaken by the charity. He said, "Staff and volunteers work so closely together. I was offered support and encouragement, but most importantly, hope to help me move forward." John is now keen to highlight issues around men's mental health and is willing to speak to groups in colleges and businesses about the issue. It doesn't matter how hard you fall, it's what you do when you get back up that counts. Mm. He can be contacted via his Facebook page, Getting Back Up.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 21st of October 2016. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Northrop Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too. And of course, return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.